appreciate you being here this evening. It's always good to see you. James really loves the Free Harbor Lecture. I've gone with him before, and it is really wonderful, highly educational. Some really outstanding people who teach classes. It's virtually all week. He'll be back on Thursday, I think. I did this where I used to preach, and some things seemed to go well. And the better we know people, I think the kinder we are to them, because we know them. We know maybe what they're going through. It's a little bit like the fellow that he had three little children, and on Sunday, he was only able to make it on Sunday. And during the course of the worship, it was one little child was down under the pew. He was just struggling, just had a hard time. They were making noise. He was apologetic to the people around him, but they didn't seem to buy it too much. They went to the leaders of the congregation and said, something's got to be done about that man. So he doesn't have control of those kids. And hadn't been there but 3 or 4 weeks on Sundays. So the leaders went to him and he said, well, I'm just doing the best I can. He said, I had to move here, I had to switch jobs. My wife died about a month ago. And he said, I'm just doing the best I can do. Well, when you get to know maybe what's the problem is, maybe what really struggles that person may have, it changes the whole picture. And then they want to do everything they could to help. When you think about, you say, what's that got to do with this, what you're doing? Well, if you know the background of some of these people that we sing their songs every time we meet, and you know a little bit about what was behind it. Most people that write, and by the way, it's a difficult thing. I don't know if you ever tried that or not, to put your feelings in words. Maybe you don't know the music, maybe there's no music, but you're just writing, and it's a poem, actually, what amounts to it. I told Jeff this morning, it's like going to a gallery. I remember I loved the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and that's where some of the great painters' pictures are. On the fifth floor, Van Gogh, and they just, you know, Starry Night, you're familiar with that thing, the Ice Guard up there. I said, what's that worth? I said, don't know, whatever. Somebody paid for it at the auction. New York City owns that painting. And there were other paintings up there. I stood there and I looked at them. I can do that. I mean, that's just, well, I've done enough of to know that I can't do that. Some of this modern art stuff that is worth millions, and I think, I can do it. No, I can't. I can't do it. I've tried, it doesn't work. And it's not as simple as you may think. But it's worth the experience to try. Most people who are great songwriters probably are writing from some experience they've had, some extreme, some sadness. They're pouring out their heart in words. And probably every song in that book, maybe 900 and something, if we knew all the stories behind those songs, we probably would do a better job, not that we don't do it now, a better job, at least from our perspective, we know the background. We know what it's all about. Maybe it accuse you guys. Some of those songs this evening, and what I want you to do is not touch a songbook. Oh, somebody got light-headed when I said that. I looked at that. You can do it. Don't touch it. Don't do anything else. we'll see what happens. This beloved gospel song was written by a Chicago citizen named Horatio Spafford. He was born in North Troy, New York, October 1828. Now, I'm not going to point this out all the time, but I want you to notice when I mention some dates, a lot of these dates center around or are close to the Civil War. Now, I don't know whether this had anything to do with it or not, but a lot of either these people were living at the time or something happened about that time. I just noted that as I was looking at these things. Now, that may have penetrated some hearts because the country was being torn apart. Could have. As a young man, Spafford had established the most successful legal practice in Chicago. Despite his financial success, he always maintained a keen interest in Christian activities. He enjoyed a close and active relationship with D.L. Moody and the other evangelical leaders of that era. He was described by George Steppens, a noted gospel musician, as a man of unusual intelligence and refinement, deeply spiritual, and a devoted student of the scriptures. Some months prior to the Chicago Fire in 1871, Spafford had invested heavily in real estate on the shore of Lake Michigan, and his holdings were wiped out by that disaster. Lost it all. However, just before this, he had experienced the death of his son. Desiring a rest for his wife and four daughters, as well as wishing to join and assist Moody and Sankey in one of their campaigns in Great Britain, Spafford planned a European trip for his family in 1873. And again, we're talking the war was over in 65. This is 73. In November of that year, due to an unexpected last-minute business development, he had to remain in Chicago, but he sent his wife and four daughters on ahead of schedule on the SS Ville du Havre. He expected to follow them a few days later. On November 22nd, the ship was struck by the Lochran, an English vessel, and sank in 12 minutes. Several days later, the survivors were finally landed at Cardiff, Wales, and Mrs. Spafford cabled her husband, saved alone. Shortly afterwards, Spafford left by ship to join his bereaved wife. It is speculated that on the sea near the area where it was thought his four daughters had drowned, Spafford penned this text with words so significantly describing his own personal grief. Can't imagine. When sorrows like sea billows roll. It is noteworthy, however, that Spafford does not dwell on that theme of life sorrows and trials, but focuses attention in the third stanza of the redemptive work of Christ, and in the fourth verse, that verse anticipates his glorious second coming. Humanly speaking, it is amazing that one could experience such personal tragedies and sorrows as did Horatio Spafford, and still be able to say with such convincing clarity, "It is well with my soul." In his late life, Spafford experienced a mental disturbance, which prompted him to go to Jerusalem under the strange delusion that he was the second Messiah. He died there in 1888 at the age of 60. When peace like a river.
When peace like a
probably the most, I didn't check on this, but probably the most prolific writer in the book, Fanny Crosby. A remarkable lady, fantastic. They're listed in the back, all the writers, and you can count them, how many she's responsible for. I think 12, maybe, something like that. But she's such a special person. Gospel music as an important form of Christian hymnody had its beginning in the latter half of the 19th century. It is associated with such well-known names as Moody, Sankey, Bliss, Francis, Jane, Crosby. Crosby, perhaps more than any other writer, however, truly captured the spirit of the American gospel song movement. It is estimated that Fanny Crosby wrote more than 8,000 gospel song texts in her lifetime. You think about that. It's amazing. 8,000. Her hymns have been and are still being sung more frequently than those of any other gospel writer. Her many favorites have been an important part of evangelical worship for the past century. It is truly amazing that anyone, and especially a blind person, could write on this variety of spiritual truths and experiences with such proliferation. For a considerable period during her life, while under contract to a music publisher, she wrote 3 hymns each week. She used over 200 hymn names besides her own. Many of her original texts are still being uncovered and no doubt will be published in the near future. Often the themes for her hymns were suggested by visiting ministers wishing to have a new song on a particular subject. At other times, musician friends would first compose the music and then ask her to write the words. Such was the case for the hymn Blessed Assurance. The music for the hymn was composed by Mrs. Joseph Knapp, K-N-A-P-P, an amateur musician, wife of the founder of the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, and a close personal friend of Fanny Crosby. One day, Mrs. Knapp played this melody for the blind poetess and asked, "What does this tune say?" Fanny responded immediately, "Why, that says, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine."
Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory.
Such a hymn is what a friend we have in Jesus. Though it is not considered to be an example of great literary writing, it simply stated truths that brought solace and comfort to countless numbers of God's people since it was first written in 1857. So relevant to the basic spiritual needs of people are these words that many missionaries state that it is one of the first hymns taught to new converts. The very simplicity of the text and music has been its appeal and strength. Joseph Scriven was born 1819 of prosperous parents in Dublin, Ireland. He was a graduate of Trinity College in Dublin. At the age of 25, he decided to leave his native country and migrate to Canada. His reasons for leaving his family and country seemed to have been twofold. Religious influence of the Plymouth Brethren upon his life, estranging him from his family, and the accidental drowning of his fiancée the night before their wedding. From that time, Stribben developed a totally different pattern of life. He took the Sermon on the Mount literally. It is said that he gave freely of his limited possessions, even sharing the clothing from his own body. If necessary, and never once refused to help anyone who needed it. Ira Sankey tells in his writings of the man who had seen Stribben in the streets of Port Hope, Ontario, with his sawbuck, and saw, asked, "Who is that man? I want him to work for me." The answer was, "You cannot get that man. He saws wood only for poor widows and sick people who cannot pay." Because of this manner of life, Stribben was respected, but was considered to be eccentric by those who knew him. What a Friend We Have in Jesus was never intended by Stribben for publication. Upon learning of his mother's serious illness and unable to be with her in far-off Dublin, he wrote a letter of comfort enclosing the words of this text. Sometime later, when he himself was ill, a friend who came to call on him chanced to see the poem scribbled on scratch paper near the bed. The friend read it with keen interest and asked Stribben if he had written the words. Stribben, with typical modesty, replied, "The Lord and I did it between us." In 1869, a small collection of his poems was published. It was simply entitled Hymns and Other Verses. After the death of Joseph Stribben, also by accidental drowning, the citizens of Port Hope, Ontario, erected a monument on the Port Hope-Peterborough Highway, which runs from Lake Ontario, with the text and these words inscribed. 4 miles north in Pengowan Cemetery lies the philanthropist and author of this great masterpiece, written at Port Hope in 1857. The composer of music, Charles Converse, was a well-educated, versatile, successful Christian whose talents range from law to professional music. Under the pen name Carl Redden, he wrote numerous scholarly articles on many subjects, and though he was an excellent musician and composer, with many of his works performed by the leading American orchestras and choirs of his day, his life is best remembered for the simple music so well suited to Stribben's text. Ira Sankey discovered the hymn in 1875, just in time to include it in a well-known collection of Sankey's Gospel Hymns No. 1. Later, Sankey wrote the last hymn, which went into the book, became one of the first in favor. What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And No Not One. Counter blessings is generally considered to be Oakland's finest hymn. It first appeared in Songs for Young People, compiled and published by Edwin Excel in 1897. It has been sung all the world. One writer has stated, like a beam of sunlight, it has brightened up the dark places of the earth. Perhaps no American hymn was ever received with such enthusiasm in Great Britain as was this hymn. The London Daily News, in giving an account of a meeting presided over by Gypsy Smith, reported, Mr. Smith announced the hymn, Count Your Blessings. He said, in South London, the men sing it, the boys whistle it, the women rock their babies to sleep on this hymn. During the Great Revival in Wales, it was one of the hymns sung at every service, along with such Welsh favorites as Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, and Oh, That Will Be Glory. The composer of the music, E.O. Excel, is a well-known name in early gospel hymnody. He was born in Stark County, Ohio, on December 13, 1851. At the age of 20, he became a singing teacher, traveling around the country, establishing singing schools. For 20 years, he was associated with Sam Jones, a well-known Southern revivalist. Excel was recognized as one of the finest song leaders of his day. In addition to writing and composing more than 2,000 gospel songs, as well as publishing about 50 songbooks, he administered a successful music publishing business in Chicago. While assisting Gypsy Smith and Evans' evangelistic campaign in Louisville, Kentucky, in 1921, he was suddenly stricken at the age of 70 and died in Louisville.
When upon life's
fields you are tempest tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings and give one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord Seminary in 1861. Throughout his lifetime,
He had several preaching responsibilities, served as a secretary to his father, the governor, was a professor of Hebrew at Newton Seminary, and later taught English literature at Rochester University, where he published several college texts in these subjects. He also wrote other hymns, but none ever gained the acceptance that He Leadeth Me did. Although Gilmore was highly respected both in religious and educational circles, he is best remembered for this hurriedly written text when he was just 28 years old and a visiting supply preacher in Philadelphia. William Bradbury, an important contributor to the development of early gospel hymns, saw this text in the Watchman and Reflector magazine in 1863 and wrote this fitting melody to match the words. He also added two additional lines to the chorus. His faithful follower I would be, for by His hand He leadeth me. Other hymns written by Bradbury include Jesus Loves Me, Just As I Am, Depth of Mercy, Even Me, Sweet Hour of Prayer, and The Solid Rock. This hymn, perhaps more than any other modern hymn, has been translated into many different languages. Servicemen during World War II were greatly surprised to find it one of the favorite hymns sung by the primitive Polynesians in the South Pacific. When the first Baptist church building in Philadelphia at the busy Broad and Arch intersection was demolished in 1926, it was replaced by a large office building. In the corner of the building was placed a bronze tablet, which still remains today, containing the words of the first verse of He Leadeth Me. This was done, states the inscription, in recognition of the beauty and fame of this beloved hymn and in remembrance of its distinguished author. Checkers. That's pretty big. And quite remarkable. Richard's father, who taught Freed, died of frontal lobe dementia. It's inherited. Richard was with us for, oh, I don't know, 8 years maybe, nine. And wouldn't you know, he got frontal lobe dementia and died 4 or 5 years ago. The last time I guess, talked to Richard was at Madison Church of Christ. I think it was maybe a funeral. I walked up to him and I said, "Richard, it's so good to see you." And he put his hand out, shook my hand, and as I turned away, he asked somebody who was there with us, he said, "Who was that man?" It really hurt me. In that book, there's 9 songs that Richard Van Dyke either wrote the music to or wrote with the assistance of somebody. Sometimes there's like a couple people listed there. The ones who write the music's on the right side, the ones who write the words on the left side. And sometimes it's just one person that not only writes the words, the lyrics, but also writes the music. But his name is on, I believe, 9 songs in the book. Was a dear friend, and I know they had one son who was living in Lexington, I believe. And I believe that son has 2 sons. So he has 2 grandsons, and that's an inherited disease. So it's pretty rough. No cure. And a sad situation. Another man I want to tell you about, we're going to sing one of his songs. And he's in the book 12 times. His name is Tillett S. Tedley. Brother Tedley and his wife lived in Memphis and was just a wonderful couple. I never met him, wish I had, but never met him. Once, I think it was on Sunday morning, he and his wife were going to church in Memphis. Crossing the street, a car hit him. Killed her. He survived after quite some time. He was born 1885, died in 1987, 102 when he died, and was also just a great, great writer. And from what I understand, a humble man, kind, gentle, sweet person. Worthy art thou.
Worthy of praise is Christ our Redeemer. Worthy of glory, honor, and power.
Worthy of the Father's soul's adoration. Worthy art thou. Worthy art thou.
Worthy of
music for the people, he said. In this he became eminent. After a very successful career in writing secular music, Thompson turned his talents to writing gospel hymns. Later, he started his own publishing and music store business in East Liverpool and Chicago, Illinois. His business earned him a sizable income in his lifetime, and yet he was always known as a kind and quiet and unassuming Christian gentleman. Greatly loved and admired by his associates, Thompson was also known for his travels by horse and buggy from one community to another throughout Ohio, singing his songs to people everywhere. Will Thompson was a personal friend of the evangelist D.L. Moody. This particular hymn was one of Moody's favorites. It is said that on his deathbed, while being visited by Mr. Thompson, Moody feebly whispered, "Will, I would rather have written softly and tenderly than anything I have been able to do in my whole life." This hymn was widely used as an invitation hymn in the great evangelistic meetings conducted by Moody and Sankey throughout Great Britain and in this country as well. We're going to sing that in just a minute. I know that music can influence people to become Christians. I guess the first and maybe the greatest in the New Testament is in Acts 16:25, when Paul and Silas were in that Philippian jail, singing and praying at midnight. What a bizarre thing to do. Even the prisoners were influenced. The jailers weren't very highly thought of. They were at kind of almost the bottom, right above slavery, I guess in the social order. But this jailer became interesting. And in the middle of the night, this illustrates it, if there's no other example. How much do you have to know to become Christian? I know that Ethiopian eunuch going along that bumpy, you know, chariot could have been very long. It was not an ideal place to study the Bible. But it says simply there that he was taught, Philip taught him about Jesus. Some people go, "Well, you can't do it." Well, he did. Just taught him about Jesus. And he came to that certain water. Here in Acts 16, a man was influenced by singing. The example that Paul and Silas said, that may never happen. So he wanted to know more. Who are these guys? Singing, praying to their God in the middle of the night? Yeah, in the middle of the night. How long did it take? I don't know. A few hours. Couldn't have been more than that. His whole family. Taught his family. So evidently, you don't have to be taught very long. Because Paul and Silas just talked about Jesus. And that Ethiopian was taught about Jesus by Philip. How long? Not very long. In those cases, the people were moved just to become a Christian. We're going to stand and sing this song that Will Thompson wrote a long time ago. It has such great words. Would you stand if you're concerned about your soul and you want to become a Christian tonight or the weekend? Pray with you, for you. You're a Christian, but maybe you've got something on your heart that's just bothering you, and we need to pray about that. Let's be standing as Jeff leads us in this wonderful song.
All the